Hello, 242. So today I would like to talk about sockets, and let's talk a little bit about the client and server flow of how to write simple servers and clients. Simple client is as simple as taking in the host name and the port, and in this case we can open those two up, do some reading and writing on the socket's file descriptor, and then close it. That's about all it is. Server's a little bit more complicated. We have a couple different things that need to happen. One is we need to keep track of all of the open connections, all the clients that are connected to us. And we also need to have a socket that's listening for new client connections. So we're going to do this in an infinite loop. And in that infinite loop, what we're going to do, hang out and wait until something's happened. If it's happened on sockets 0, the listener socket, then we know that we want to create a new connection, and so we'll call accept, and that'll do it. Now, there should be some error checking in here. I'm trying to squish everything on slides. Then the second thing that we will do is we'll loop through every single socket that we have, and we'll check to see if they're still there. If they're broken, we better get rid of them. And if they're not, if they have some data, then we better handle that data. All right, so we're storing all of the open connections plus the listener in just a single vector of sockets. A couple things to notice off of this. There's some functions that we haven't talked about and don't know what they're doing. Wait on events, has data, is broken. And the second thing is that this for loop is starting at the end and working its way down towards 1. All right, so we're not going to get rid of 0. The reason we do this is that if you're going to erase something out of a vector, you really need to make sure that you're working from the end down. Otherwise, when you do the I++, you're actually going to end up skipping over 1, and you can just write that down on some paper and see how that's going to work. So we have these three functions that we want to look at, and the first one that we're going to look at is going to be wait on events. The goal off of this is whether this, you know, return value, did it actually return some events? And then we're going to wait on them, and then you're going to do this by looking at some sockets. We take in some sockets and then a timeout. So we're going to create this with a struct pollfd, which is a system structure to keep track of the file descriptor and the events that we want to look on that particular file descriptor. So I'm going to generate this vector, and by pushing back these pollfds, setting each one of them, each pollfd to the socket's file descriptor, and then check for the very specific events, poll in, that there's some input data that's waiting on it. Poll rd hup and poll hup, those are the hangup ones, i.e. the POSIX hangup one and the Linux hangup one, just, which is specific to Linux, but those are just constant saying, hey, did the socket break? After we've pushed all of those in, we're going to call a function called poll. So poll is the modern way of actually checking. This is the goal of this is for us to go and look and see if an event has occurred. Now, one thing we could do is we could just do this, you know, really quick. Did any events occur? No. Okay, run through it. Did any events occur? All right, that's called kind of busy checking or busy waiting, and it's going to use a lot of system resources. Another side would be like, don't do anything until something happened. And that's not the best thing either, because it basically locks your program out from any sort of interactivity. If I wanted to be able to read stuff from the command line or every so often check to see if other things were going on and being fixed or handled in my program, I wouldn't be able to do that if what I had was this blocking poll, all right? So remember with reads and writes, reads are blocking by definition. So what does that mean? What that means is that if I were to call read on the listener, so I were just to sit there and say, oh, well, hey, read on the listener, and then I'll accept the client, it means that none of my other connections would be handled. So we kind of have this kind of balance going back and forth. So poll is the modern way to do it. There's an old way to do it called select. Don't do it. Just use poll. And poll takes in timeouts, and the timeouts it'll take in is -1, which means hang out and wait. And if any event occurs on any socket that you just had, any event occurs on any one of these file descriptors, it'll wake up and return. That's pretty cool. 0 would mean just check and return back whether it had any events or not. That's pretty good too. And then otherwise, you could pass in the number of seconds that you wanted to wait. So you could say like, hey, every 4 seconds, stop and wait. And then never wait more than 4 seconds. So if you had to have some interactivity, you could do that. All right, so that's how pull works. Let's talk about hang up and how we could deal with hang up. So is broken, the goal of is broken is just to tell whether a socket has closed on the client side. And it'll do that with pull, RD, hup, or pull, hup. Those are the events that we're looking for. And now note that we can check to see what events occurred by looking at the R events, the return events, what events actually occurred. And if either one of those events occurred, then we'll return true. Here we're calling pull. Note that we don't need a big fancy vector because we're just going to look at an array, which is a pointer. And here it's just a pointer to the single pull FD struct. We're only passing in one of them, and we have zero as our timeout, so we'll instantaneously return. Now, I wish we didn't have to do this. I wish we could check for the see if the file descriptor was closed. You can't do that because once a file descriptor is closed, it goes back to the operating system, and that file descriptor could be assigned to somebody else. So if I went to just check to see if it was closed, but you had already opened it up in a different thread, well, then we would say it was still open even though it had been closed, right? So we need some way of being able to check. The only way we can check here is to do this is broken. So don't close down the file descriptor until we find out that it's broken and then deal with it. The second one is to check to see if there's any data on there. So we know an event occurred and then we could decide whether it was data or whether it was a hang up in two separate ones. Same idea, except the event is pull in and then we check it against pull in, but otherwise we just immediately return back. All right, so those are the basic structures that we need for sockets. Now, there's one more thing that we haven't talked about. Well, two more things we haven't talked about, and I'll save that for Wednesday. Hopefully with pull, though, you can see how this applies back to the lab 4. Lab 4 is just writing comments. Pull is doing what? It's checking to see if file descriptors have events on them. How cool is that? All right, so the example that I want to run through is going to be time. So it's example time. So what I have here are a bunch of RFCs and then a Wikipedia and then a link to NIST. And all of those, you can kind of flip through them. We're going to look at the network time protocol. And in particular, we're going to look at the simple network time protocol. And we're going to get what time it is from a server elsewhere from here. We're going to just ask NIST, hey, what time is it? And they're going to return that back. Now, there's a bunch of stuff, and this is really can get really dense. I would encourage you to look. I think RFC 4330 is a simple network time. You can see how an RFC looks. If you've taken web programming, you'll see that, or if you take 360, you'll see it else. But I want you to be able to take a look at what an RFC would look like. They have a very specific format. I'm going to walk you through this. So some of this will seem like magic, but it's not really magic. It's just the case that I've just read through the RFC. It's in there and you can scroll through and I'll try to show you where those go. All right, so the way this is going to basically work is it's going to, I want the number of seconds. So I'm going to store that in an unsigned int seconds. This is the number of seconds that have elapsed since January 1st, midnight, 1900. And so the basic way we do this is we create a socket, we open the socket, we're going to ask time.nist.gov, the Institute of Standards, hey, there it is, what time is it? And it's going to respond to me on port number 123. Now, there are a couple older formats, one is like time and one is daytime, and those are great too, and they still work on NIST, and we can look at those, and maybe we'll do that example next. But I did the more kind of in-depth one, which is the network time. We're going to close it, and then that's going to be that. And so reading through the RFC, what you'll find is that most times, and in almost all situations, network formats are binary-based, not ASCII-based, i.e. they're concerned about bits and bytes. And that's because you can really reduce things down. If you're only concerned about four different possibilities, that's 2 bits versus saying, oh, well, I'm going to read in 8 bits, all right? So that's the smaller the data you have to send, the faster it's going to work. A request is 48 bytes long, and if you read through that, you'll see that's what it is. It's 12 ints. But in our case, the simple network protocol, we only need the first byte. And if you look through, I think it was page 6 on the 4330, but it could be off. There'll be a table, and it's all done out in ASCII. And it'll show you it. It'll actually kind of read backwards. The most significant bits are on the left, all right? That's the biggest bit. And the least significant bits are on the right. I'm just going to look at the first byte. What the protocol says is every other byte can be zero. So I initialize everything to zero, the 48 bytes to zero, and then in the first byte, I wanted to set it to 0x1b. And the reason I want to do that is that I want the version to be version 3. You could do version 4, it would be fine, and the mode to be 3, which is this kind of return back right now what the time is, all right? So an important thing to mention, which I have mentioned before, which is the idea of big Indian format versus little Indian format. x86 is, which is the Intel processor setup and AMD and everybody who did and followed the x86 architecture, has the least significant byte first. Every byte has the most significant bit first, all right? So the most significant bit is always on the left-hand side for a byte. But where those bytes are the least significant byte will be the first one in x86. Now, in good architectures like the PowerPC architecture, it is big Indian where the most significant bit is at the left and the most significant byte is at the left. What a wonderful architecture for PowerPC is, and what a terrible architecture x86 is. Okay. So example time, let's go on. So what we need to do is we're going to create a message, an array of unsigned chars, just 48 bytes, and set them to zero. That's good old memset, which we've seen a couple times. That's just a function that allows us to set everything to zero. All those bytes get set to zero. And my first byte I'm going to set to 0x1b. Away we go. Socket, do this. I need to write something, and I'll be good. Now note, with NIST, there are other time servers you can call, but with NIST, it will not respond to multiple requests within 4 seconds. It'll give you the request back, but it'll delay 4 seconds, and that's just to keep them from being completely overwhelmed by request from somebody just pinging it and trying to hope that a second is goes up, all right? So when you run this, you might run it like 10 times in a row, and you'll see, well, it didn't change, or it won't give you a response. That's just because you need to wait 4 seconds. So when you do it once, wait about 10 seconds, and then run it again and see how it works. All right, so what are we going to do? We're going to write that message array, those 48 bytes, to the socket. And we just call write, which is something we already talked about. We talked about files and file writing way, way back. Sock.fd, message 48. Away it goes. It writes it. Wonderful. Okay. And so how do we get a response back? Well, we're going to get a response back by reading 48 bytes, because that's what the RFC says. So I read it, I write it off, and then I wait for the response back and I read it. Now, I need to turn bytes into an int. And the way I'm going to do that is, it's kind of messy, but it should be fine for you. You should be comfortable with this. We talked a lot about pointers at the beginning of the term. We're going to cast message, which is an array of unsigned chars. We're going to cast that into an array of unsigned ints by casting the pointer. So now it's an array of unsigned ints. And we want to get to the 40th byte, or the 10th unsigned int. And there we go. That's the one. Now, that's in the RFC, and you can do that by counting off the number of ints, or 4-byte chunks that it'll be. And there it is, seconds. I can see out seconds, and I'll get it, and it'll be wonderful. Now, obviously, there's more slides, so that didn't work. Oh, no. What did it mean? It needs UDP, not TCP. All right, so way back when we built our socket struct, what did we do? We said, oh, yeah, we'll use socket stream because it's TCP, and we're not going to worry about UDP. Well, this particular protocol requires UDP, all right? So UDP is the fast one. It doesn't take all the time to set up a reliable network connection. It's just saying, ping off this one packet and then get it back. So what we should do here is we can modify our socket structure. And in our case, we can just modify our socket struct open for clients. And what we'll do is we'll add in a third parameter, and we'll have a default value. So all of the cases where it was before, where we didn't want it, we just wanted to send in 2, it will open it up as a TCP. But if we include a false in the default value, if we add in that third parameter and it's a false, then now it'll treat it like it's UDP. It's pretty cool. It's a good trick to have if you're going to change your API along the way. You can now add in this. And you can see the code when the code is posted. You can see the code and look through it and see how I made that change. And now what else do we have? You're going to write, we're going to read, and we're going to get this, and we're going to print it out, and oh no, the time isn't right. And then I will connect to the server and disconnect, and it'll print something out, but it's giving me a really crazy number. If I wait 10 seconds, it's like jumping up millions of values, and so that's not 10 seconds. And the issue is back to that most significant bit and most significant byte. The value that we're treating this and the seconds in is we're treating it as an x86 int, or most least significant byte coming first. However, network order, which is what your most network protocols work in, is big endian. See, I told you x86, terrible architecture. Big endian network order, we need to swap things around. Now, thankfully, we are using C++, and so this is actually super easy to do. We read our value back in, and we're going to swap message 43, four bytes forward, with 40, the fourth byte and the first byte, and 41 and 42, the second byte and the third byte. And then we can just do the same little trick of casting it over to an int and getting it back. And there it goes. Now what you'll see is you'll get a number, and then you'll wait 10 seconds, and you'll see that the number has increased by 10. Now, the network time protocol also includes the ability to get a fraction of a second as a fixed point as the next 32 bits down. And that's a cool thing, too. And you could certainly look at that and get a fraction of a second. This is a cool little way to be able to figure out time in any sort of a network situation. But, you know, it's also a protocol. You have talked to another server that you didn't write, that you don't even know how it necessarily works or how it's implemented or what language it's implemented in, across a network, and been able to get a response back, which you then handled. All right, that's the power of RFCs and the power of sockets. So we will have a new assignment coming up. I'm not going to give it out until, I don't know, it'll probably be up tomorrow. It's going to be another short little assignment to be able to do with sockets. I traditionally have done a much larger one. I don't think that's going to work for us at this point in our lives. It's really hard to debug when I'm just looking at screenshots, and it's really hard for you guys to be able to talk with me and trying to get things worked out, just because office hours are just limited in the ability for me to look over your shoulder and do stuff and walk around and do things. So I don't think we're going to have a big assignment off of this, but we will have a socket assignment. We haven't also finished up our server yet. We also could write our server in a slightly better way, which is we could write our server to handle the different connections as threads, and that would be cool. And so we'll work on that as well. Dr. Marmerstein's done a great job of building our firewall so that we can't start and open up a port and listen on a particular port on one system and talk to it on a second system, which is great for security. Otherwise, it's a little bit annoying for us. So it's kind of hard for us to set up a server client for you to really build that are on two different systems. I'm not interested in actually working that all the way forward and doing that. I think if we were all in person, I would do that more. So anyway, I'm not too worried about that. We will write something off of this, and you'll be able to kind of play with this, hopefully implementing a little bit of a protocol to talk to somewhere else in the world. And I think that might be fun. I'm thinking about doing something with HTTP. And using that kind of a very standard protocol, and you'd being able to generate some request with that and send it off in code and handle it. All right, I think that's all I got for you today. It's a lot of stuff. Remember, your assignment is due tonight. If you don't have power, you wouldn't be listening to this, but whenever you get it and you don't have power, hand it in when you can hand it in. It's okay. It's comments. Rewrite the stuff. Write in your comments about what was going on and hand it in. I think you should be able to do that. Everyone should be able to do that and get a really good grade on it. And I'll be handing back these two labs by the end of the week. You should have a good feeling for exactly where you're standing in terms of the class, and you can make your decisions up about the alternative pass-fail or a withdrawal. if you think you can get a C in it, I think alternative pass-fail is definitely 100% the way to go. And after these, you get the values back. After you get your grades back, you definitely will kind of be able to feel that out. I will also put up the assignment for the final exam so you can do some what-ifs in Canvas as well. Okay, I think that's where we're standing. I hope to talk to you again soon. Office hours are tonight. Bye.